It's 5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and you're listening to MPBN Radio. Ahead on Maine Things Considered this evening, Governor Paula Page's reversal on Maine's special relationship with its Indian tribes has those tribes stunned. And controversy over whether to allow alewives to pass into the St. Croix River Basin. First, though, we'll have this news. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. Tribal leaders in Maine say they're surprised and a bit confused by Governor Paula Page's decision to rescind a three-year-old executive order proclaiming a special relationship between the tribes and the state. It's unclear what prompted the move, but as A.J. Higgins reports, some tribal officials believe it may be an act of retribution.
The executive order, released 3 years ago, states that Maine's Indian tribes would be included in discussions over laws and policies affecting Native peoples. But last week, LePage rescinded that executive order against the backdrop of a contentious dispute over state water quality standards. The sudden change of heart arrived in the form of an email from the governor's office to Penobscot Nation Chief Kirk Francis.
I'm a little bit, a lot confused by it. I don't understand where it came from.
LePage's new order explicitly rescinds the older proclamation, which created a special relationship between the state and the Passamaquoddy tribe, the Penobscot Nation, the Houlton Band of Maliseets, and the Aroostook Band of Mi'kmaqs. The new order declares that the tribes are sovereigns in their own right and that the relationship between them and the state amount to a, quote, relationship between equals with its own set of responsibilities. But Francis says the document then takes a turn and declares all tribal members, their government structures, their lands or natural resources are subject to the laws of the state.
This does nothing more in terms of providing for anything productive but throw fuel on an already very emotional and tumultuous relationship.
3 years ago, tribal leaders thought LePage's special relationship language could signal a turning point in a mercurial relationship with the state that was punctuated by frequent disputes involving water and hunting and fishing rights. But Brenda Commander, chief of the Houlton Band of Maliseets, says LePage's goals for tribal consultations on issues that affected them never actually played out.
The consultation would let us sit down together and talk about how that would affect us, and I really didn't see that happening.
Francis agrees, saying that LePage's decision to rescind the special relationship isn't all that great of a loss.
I will say, that's continued to be a work in progress and hasn't really met the goals and objectives of the executive order.
Tribal leaders say they believe the administration's decision to rescind the executive order may have been prompted in part by recent statements by officials with the U.S. Department of Environmental Protection who say Maine must approve stringent pollution standards to safeguard water quality on tribal lands. Maine has rejected the EPA's demands, and the Penobscot Nation has sued the state over its assertion that the tribe does not have control over the water quality of the Penobscot River. Passamaquoddy Tribal Chief Fred Moore says LePage's executive order is an act of retribution.
It's really a retaliation for the EPA letter to the Maine DEP concerning Maine's water quality standards and the fact that they impact Passamaquoddy sustenance fishing rights, and those rights are a federally protected right.
Tribal leaders say that LePage's latest executive order also points blame at the tribes for failing to contribute to consultations in a way that respects the state's interests. That's a charge that baffles Chief Francis.
I'm not sure what we've done to make this relationship unproductive, except try to work for some basic indigenous and human rights for Wabanaki people and to have that respected.
Leaders from all four tribes are expected to meet Friday to discuss a possible response to the governor's executive order. The governor's office did not respond to MPBN's request for comment by airtime. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
You're listening to Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. Still to come, many people know that a lot of wells in Maine have arsenic, but just how much may not be as clear. A new bill would increase testing. But first, the Canadian government has joined the fray over a controversial proposal to prevent the passage of alewives into the St. Croix River near the international border. Ottawa wants unrestricted alewife passage, something which conservationists support, but which the recreational fishing lobby says could have devastating effects on the local economy. Tom Porter has our story.
In a recent letter to Governor Paul LePage, Canadian Fisheries Minister Gail Shea expressed concern over LD 800, a bill that would prevent the passage of alewives through the Grand Falls Dam. She points out that the proposal would essentially undo the provisions of a law passed 2 years ago by the Maine legislature, which opened up the St. Croix River Basin to alewives, also known as river herring. Minister Shea was not available for comment, but in her letter she says Canada wants to work with all concerned parties to, quote, find a mutually agreeable solution to enable full reintroduction of alewives into the St. Croix River Basin, end quote. That's not something GOP State Rep Beth Turner of Burlington wants to see happen.
I put LD 800 in for the Guides Association from Grand Lake Stream.
Grand Lake Stream is home to several sporting camps and lodges near the Upper St. Croix watershed and a favourite destination for recreational fishermen looking to catch smallmouth bass. According to the local Chamber of Commerce, it's an area that is home to the heaviest concentration of guides in the state. Turner says she's worried about the impact that continued free passage of river herring could have on their livelihoods.
This could devastate their part of Washington County. Up in that area, they are heavily dependent on the sport and guiding industry.
The LYs compete with the Young of the Year bass for food.
Luis Cataldo is a registered guide and selectman in Grand Lake Stream. Since the watershed opened 2 years ago, Cataldo says there has not been a dramatic increase in alewives. About 27,000 of the fish were counted last year, a fraction of the 2 million plus that used to make it into the watershed before state government intervened. Cataldo attributes the small returns to increased runoff in recent years, but he fears that if the fishways are not closed off again, the smallmouth bass population and, by extension, the economic health of the region could be jeopardized.
We spend 6 months out of the year fishing these waters, you know, smallmouth bass, landlocked salmon. And if we don't have fish, these people that we have coming here are going to go somewhere else. And if they go somewhere else, we don't have a job.
He cites a 2013 study by state officials indicating that nearly $15 million was pumped into the regional economy by recreational fishing.
We got to look after what we got here, and what we have here is very special. You know, our fisheries are all we got for an economy.
I can totally appreciate why people might be concerned about it, particularly if, you know, there continues to be information that is floated out there that's misleading or knowingly incorrect.
Sean Mahoney is with the Conservation Law Foundation, which opposes LD 800 and welcomes the involvement of the Canadian government on the issue. Despite anecdotal stories suggesting otherwise, Mahoney says there is irrefutable evidence out there that alewives and smallmouth bass can coexist. And then there's the fact that alewives, not smallmouth bass, are native to the St. Croix watershed.
And the lack of fish passage kept them from accessing their native habitat, which is both a violation of the Clean Water Act and is not good for the general ecosystem of the river.
Both Sean Mahoney and Luis Cataldo are among those scheduled to testify before the Marine Resources Committee at a public hearing on LD 800 on Monday, April 27th. A representative from the Canadian government is also expected to be in attendance. For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
Finally today, about half of all Mainers rely on private wells for water. But the underlying bedrock produces toxic chemicals like arsenic at levels deemed unsafe by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. The legislature's Health and Human Services Committee is considering a bill that would increase testing of private wells and access to filtration systems for households with contaminated water. But as Patty White reports, how the bill would be funded is generating opposition.
The presence of naturally occurring arsenic in Maine's well water isn't new, but the problem, says bill sponsor and Democratic Representative Drew Gattine, is that not enough people in Maine test for arsenic.
Many of our towns are hotspots, where nearly half of all wells contain unsafe arsenic levels. Some wells contain 30 to 50 times the safety threshold, levels found to cause skin, bladder, and lung cancer.
A study by the U.S. Geological Survey found elevated arsenic levels in Maine more widespread than previously thought. It also found large differences in concentrations from well to well, even within the same town. Dr. Deborah Rice, who spoke at the public hearing on behalf of the Environmental Health Strategy Center, says aside from arsenic's risk as a carcinogen, It's also linked to intellectual deficits.
The most commonly assessed outcome was IQ, with deficits documented in numerous studies.
A 2014 study by researchers at Columbia University found that Maine children who were exposed to greater than 5 micrograms of arsenic per liter of household well water showed an IQ loss of 5 to 6 points. To make matters worse, says Dr. Gail Carlson, an assistant professor of environmental studies at Colby College, the current EPA standard for allowable levels of arsenic is 10 micrograms per liter.
EPA recently revised its risk assessment for arsenic in drinking water and reported that arsenic may be 17 times more potent a human carcinogen than previously believed.
Arsenic is a colorless, odorless, tasteless gas, which can make it challenging to convince homeowners to test their normal-tasting drinking water. The proposed bill would establish a fund for outreach and education through a $5 fee on water tests. But once a homeowner discovers an issue, there's another challenge, the cost of treating it. Republican Representative Gary Hilliard is co-sponsor of the bill and a developer.
I can tell you without reservation that there are hundreds of folks in central Maine that know they have water quality problems but do not test due to financial concerns relating to the cost of the test or system installation.
Home filtration systems can range from several hundred to several thousand dollars. The bill would provide financial assistance to low-income Mainers by assessing a 3% charge on water filtration systems. But that's drawing opposition from water testing companies. Michael Gelberg is president of Aaron Water Quality in Freeport and Ellsworth.
It is totally unfair to ask a single industry made up of few small businesses to pay the cost associated with funding of water treatment systems for those who cannot afford them.
Gelberg, like other representatives from water testing companies who testified, says he's all in favor of safe drinking water, but tacking a 3% fee on the price of installing a water filtration system would cut a gaping hole into his tight profit margin.
As a typical water treatment contractor, our net profit on an installation can often be less than 6%. Therefore, the maximum fee proposed could represent more than 50% of the profit on the job.
Some well installers, like Ike Goodwin of Goodwin Well and Water, say other issues, like the lack of a standard statewide water test, should be addressed to help consumers.
There needs to be one set of water tests that a Maine homeowner can, you know, have done, and they know that when they're done that their water is safe.
The Health and Human Services Committee will hash out whether to change the funding source for the proposed bill in a future work session. In the meantime, experts recommend that homeowners on private wells get their water tested every 3 to 5 years. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
It's 12 minutes before 6 o'clock. Let's check the weather forecast now with meteorologist Paul Janis.
After quite a damp 24 hours, we'll see some lingering showers over northern Aroostook County for the overnight, partial clearing south and west of those regions. Areas of fog will develop, lows 34 to 44, north to south. For tomorrow, we'll start the day off partly sunny. We may see a few afternoon pop-up showers, high temperatures 46 to 56 from north to south. Thursday and Friday will both be cloudy days with a chance of scattered showers statewide, highs 45 to 55. Saturday and Sunday, mostly cloudy both days, isolated showers statewide, highs in the mid-40s to mid-50s. That is my latest forecast. For the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, I'm meteorologist Paul Janis.
And that's Maine Things Considered for today. Thanks to Mal Leary, Ed Morin, Susan Sharon, and Andrew Catalina. I'm Nora Flaherty.